Good evening again. My name is Kent Lebsock, and I am the program director for the organization we call Oweaku International Justice Project. And the Oweaku International Justice Project is a Lakota Sioux organization that was formed on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. And we are responsible for doing the international human rights work of Oweaku, which is a group of traditional Lakota people. Oweaku, as you can see on our banner, means bring back the way. Oweaku, at home on our territories in South Dakota, is committed to preserving the culture, the way of life, and most importantly, the environment that has sustained us for tens of thousands of years. It's our home, it's where we're from, and we have never left there. We didn't come over on any land bridge. We have always been in that air part of the world. And part of the purpose of this evening is to discuss that struggle to maintain that connection with the earth that we find so important. And our guest speaker tonight, one of our guest speakers, is Deborah Whiteframe, who stepped out for a moment, but I thought we'd just get started here by introducing the evening. I wanted to tell you a little bit about how we came to call it the Tour of Resistance, and it happened very organically. The person who is making the film that you'll be seeing tonight from, called Crying Earth Rise Up, lives in Chicago. She's a documentary filmmaker and has been doing a lot of work with Deborah and our people back home on the sacred water struggle. We have a lot of uranium mines in the area, and they are trying to build more uranium mines. And this is not an unusual situation. It's a big problem in the West. Janine over here from Navajo country has the same issues down in her part of the world. We, of course, here that live in New York, we have fracking upstate, which is our big challenge right now. And all of these things are a challenge to the water. And it just so happened that she was going to Chicago for the short clip that you will see tonight to introduce the film, and they were having some community events there. And then she got invited to Washington by the folks who have been organizing a lot of the XL pipeline demonstrations, and she spoke down there on the day that they surrounded the White House. And then went back to Chicago, and then she was coming here, and we got a call from our friend Tio Kasim, who said, oh, well, Deborah's going to be in town, let's do an event, and wham, bam, he had musicians. I was really doubtful that he'd actually pull it off, because I don't know how many of you have worked with our Lakota men before, or Indian men. But if there's not some women around to keep them in line, very little actually happens. So when he told me that, you know, we had a space and we had music and we had speakers and we had fabulous food, thanks to Marge. Marge, where's Marge? Did she go back downstairs too? Well, we'll get her later to give her a round of applause. We decided that, you know, we might as well make this a tour of resistance. Of course, throughout this entire process, right down the street here, we have the Occupy movement going on, which we prefer to call the decolonized movement. Because really what we're looking to is not just redistributing wealth, but changing the way the world looks at resources and the way we use those resources. We don't simply want to make sure that more people are taking the resources and using them, but make sure that those resources are used responsibly and are used in the way that we're taught as indigenous peoples under the natural law to take care of the planet so that the planet can take care of us. It really is our Mother Earth, and that's what this is all about. So Janine and I and Tio Kasim and some other people actually did have the privilege of addressing the folks at OWS on whatever Monday before Columbus Day that was. I love the way they always moved their supposed sacred holidays in the United States to a Monday so they can have the day off. You know? So we did speak to the folks down there that day, and there were some issues that came up. So we thought, as long as we're having this discussion about the earth and our connection and the changes that are clearly coming, we might as well incorporate that as part of what we talk about this evening. So in addition to our environment and making sure that we all know what is happening around the country with respect to sacred water, it's really important too, I think, at this time that we start finding our allies and finding those people that we can make connection with. And clearly the 99% have inclinations and a need for or a desire to maybe hear some of the words that we can share. And Cesar is here this evening from OWS, and we'll be talking with Janine a little later this evening. As soon as Deborah gets back up here, go ahead, finish your food. We're going to have an opening prayer, and then we'll get started with the evening's program. Thank you so much. By the way, I'm sure you're all very interested in knowing how you get to be an MC at an event like this. What happens is one of your friends makes up the program and sends it up, and it says on their MC template sock. So if you're interested in how this career path began, let's talk to Teokasen, because he can help you out in that way a lot. Deborah is here, so I'm going to ask her. Deborah Whitefield is someone I met many years ago. And she and her husband have become two very important people in my life, certainly mentor me, even though we're the same exact age. She has taught me many, many things, and it's always a privilege to welcome her to New York, which she now considers one of her homes in this, on the continent here, despite the dramatic difference from where she lives in South Dakota. She loves coming here and wandering around. I live up in Washington Heights. I always say it's like an urban reservation anyway up there. And we have a good time whenever she's here. So I'm going to invite Deborah to come up and open with a prayer for us, and then we'll start the program. So before I bring Deborah right back up here to introduce the film, I do want to point out, for those of you who've come in the last few minutes, that we do have a lot of information in the back on Leonard Peltier, as well as our work with Sacred Water. There's a brochure from Deborah, our organization, All Way Up, who bring back the way, as well as the International Justice Project that I was speaking about our international treaty work. Feel free, please, to take those. We also have the Mother Earth Accord back there, which we are delivering, hopefully, to politicians across the country. While Deborah's in New York, like I said, we're looking forward to maybe popping in on Bill Clinton and making sure it gets to his wife. It has to do with the XL pipeline, which, as most of you probably know, we've sort of won a victory on that, but it's definitely a victory. I think we saw how the actions of people together across the country, indigenous peoples, environmentalists, citizens, ranchers, came together and made such noise that action was actually taken, really scared Obama to put it off for another year or so. I think that's a really exciting thing. And I just read today that actually the Delaware Water Gap fracking was continued, the ban on fracking in the Delaware Water Gap as well. So I think people's voices are starting to be heard. Again, going back to the Occupy Wall Street movement, Deborah and I were uptown yesterday in my apartment. And the whole day, New York has always a very energetic city, and those of us who live here know that you can feel it. But the whole day yesterday, the air just seemed to be crackling with the energy of the people and the power that was going on here. As the people down here in downtown were taking those same kinds of actions that we're talking about, people working together and hopefully learning to protect our environment and protect the world we live in. So I'm going to ask Deborah to come up and briefly introduce the film clip we're about to see, and then she'll have some wise words for you all. Give her a round of applause, please. She's very shy. you speak.
Yeah. Okay. I say good greetings to everybody in this room. Come here with a good heart. I come here with a good heart, a strong heart, and a strong spirit. Over the years, I've made a lot of friends in this part of the country, and I always feel like I'm coming home when I come here. This film clip that we're going to show you is about 10 minutes long. It's a work in progress. We're creating a documentary about our people's sacred water protection work. I come from the southwestern corner of South Dakota, as it's called on a map. In my heart, that's our Fort Laramie Treaty territory. That's why we protect it. That's why we defend it. It's a gift to us, our place to live on Mother Earth in the Great Plains area is our home. This Mother Earth is our home. We're all children of the Earth, and Mother Earth is our home. There's a uranium corporation named Cameco. It's based out of Saskatchewan, Canada, doing in-situ leach uranium mining in our territory, 30 minutes from our southern border. It's a type of mining method that uses water, a lot of water. Every minute of every day, it uses 9,000 gallons of water a minute to extract this uranium ore from under the earth, pipe it out, process it, turn it to yellow cake, pack it in 55-gallon steel drums, and it's trucked away out of the country to be further processed. We discovered this mine by accident, really. We were looking into health impacts of our people. So many of our babies were having seizures. So many of our young women, healthy women, were having babies born with Down syndrome and umbilical cords that were 10, 11, 12 inches long. Our diabetes rate had skyrocketed. Other kidney diseases had skyrocketed. Our cancer rate is so high, we have many studies going on in this country. The institutions are studying our people because of these cancers. So we started looking at water, and we found this uranium mine 7 years ago. And from then on, we opposed them. We opposed their right to mine in this country, in our treaty territory, wasting our water and contaminating what was left. We made allies with some filmmakers, and they're working on this documentary. We call it Crying Earth Rise Up. It's taking a long time to make the documentary because they want to also tell the side of the Uranium Corporation, who are not being receptive to this offer. We've had cameramen kicked out of the mine area. We've had film people detained at the county jail, followed on the gravel dirt roads way out in the land by sheriffs and their deputies. The filmmakers wanted to give Cameco the opportunity to tell their side of the story, why uranium mining is good, why they should be allowed to get another permit, why they should be allowed to open four more mines, but they don't want to participate. So the filmmakers are having to make a decision on how they're going to progress with this. So we have a 10-minute short here to share tonight that tells a little bit of the story, and we're hoping to finish this documentary by spring or early summer. It's being produced by Prairie Dust Films, which is out of Chicago and Portland. And they've been working on this for maybe 2 years now. So we'll show the short, and on there it says from Pine Ridge to Chicago, because I just came from Chicago. I was in Washington, D.C. for a while doing some work on sacred water protection work there regarding the XL Keystone oil pipeline. And from Washington, D.C., I went to Chicago to do some resistance building work in the community over there, which I really liked. We had a gathering with other indigenous people and regular citizens of Chicago and the Illinois, and also from the Kalamazoo area where they experienced a dirty oil spill 15, 16 months ago that's impacting their water. So that's why it says from Pine Ridge to Chicago. And the artwork is by a child to symbolize the buffalo is where I come from. We have buffalo on our land and horses. And then the city is Chicago with airplanes and green grass where we live and a big white cloud over the city. And the next one says LMP Trader. That's the Lakota Media Project, which is a group of young Lakota adults who are learning to make documentaries so they can tell our story for us. I don't know if any of you saw Diane Sawyer's 2020 program recently, but that was a extreme exploitation of our people. So it's really good that we have our young people learning to make film and documentary. They can tell our story the way it needs to be told, rather than having us be exploited by, again, media corporations. And the Vancouver Resistance is another short about some resistance work going on in that part of the country, also with oil mines and pipelines. But tonight we're going to just show Crying Earth Rise Up. And after it, I will speak. I'll speak a bit more to share an understanding with all you all about who we are and why we do this work. So I want to thank Teokasin and everybody who pulled this evening together. I feel a really good, strong spirit here, and it's just lifting me up. It's making me strong. And like my 14-year-old daughter says, I'm feeling the love. So thank you, and you can watch the short together, and then I'll come back up here. Wopina. Well, I guess technology isn't cooperating tonight. Technologic. The film opened with a young mother, her name's Alicia Yellow Thunder. She's a Oglala Lakota woman from my home. Her daughter that you saw very briefly there, Layla, was born with very severe birth defects. She almost died in February. And they had to go to Omaha, Nebraska, which is 8 hours from where we live, in order to be at a dialysis center so she could receive dialysis because her kidneys failed. So Alicia and her husband and their other children all moved to Omaha, and they're very actively involved in seeking donors for children. That's become one of their paths in life, to not only save their daughter's life, but other children who are like Layla. One of the causes of arsenic ingestion over a extended period of time is birth defects. Arsenic can cross the placenta. Arsenic is detectable in mother's breast milk. Arsenic can change DNA in people. Arsenic is disturbed through the mining of uranium. I mentioned earlier how the pipes go way deep, thousands of feet into the ground to get the uranium ore out where it's brought up and processed. Well, it doesn't just disturb the uranium ore, it disturbs arsenic and other elements down there as well. We met a lot of scientists who were responsible for doing the most recent study in the Great Plains area for the Ogallala Aquifer. And their findings are part of our case against CAMECO in front of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. We're the first people in America for the last 17 years to challenge a uranium mining corporation. Several of us put in our interventions, and out of 21, three of us were granted standing, and I'm the lead plaintiff against CAMECO. So over the years, they've also tried to start three more mines. We've opposed them all the way. So in the 7 years that we've been doing this, CAMECO hasn't been able to turn a shovel full of dirt on their new mines, and we're challenging them on their mine permit renewal for the existing Crow Butte mine. CAMECO mines at Crow Butte. Crow Butte is a land structure about 30, as the crow flies, 30 minutes south of our southern border. That's a real special place to our people. A long time ago, we used to camp there, our ancestors camped there, and we enjoyed life there, never realizing that someday it would be a prisoner of war camp, and that that would be where they would kill Crazy Horse. That would be nearby a place where a lot of cottonwood trees grow by the river, and they wanted to negotiate a treaty with us. 10,000 Lakotas came and said no to the treaty and left. So many decades passed before we finally did enter into a treaty with America. But this land is real special to us. And at the age I am now, I'm a great-grandmother. I really appreciate the teachings of my family on on my father's side, I descend from Chief Red Cloud. On my mother's side, I descend from the Northern Cheyenne. There's a special relationship between the Cheyenne and the Lakota. We've been allies over the millennia. Our people have married into each other's nations, and we share a lot of our spiritual way of life with the Cheyenne Nation. We were raised Ogallala Lakotas on Pine Ridge, our family. I have six sisters, two brothers. I've been married for 32 years. I have three birth children, but I raised 12 children, and I'm still raising two right now. In our Lakota way, there's a word, it's called Wablamija, and that means they walk the earth alone. In American society, I believe it's translated to mean orphan. But in our way, there is no orphan. We do not want our children to walk the earth alone, so we have them come into our circle and into our homes, and we raise them. So I was raised Lakota way by my family. When you grow up in your house, mother, father, siblings, that's Tiwahe. Many Tiwahan together make up a Teoshpaye. Teoshpaye is the relatives living together. I come from the Ideshija Teoshpaye, which in English is the Red Cloud campfire. I live with the Oyukbe Teoshpaye, which is the people of Crazy Horse, where my husband comes from and one of my grandfathers. Crazy Horse was a shirt wearer of the Oyukbe. Black Elk was the healer, and the Naja was my grandfather, Big Road. Chunku Tonka was his name. That was his name because as he traveled in camp with his Teoshpaye, he left a big road, many people in his Teoshpaye. So that's where I live now, along the banks of Wounded Knee Creek. The way that we were raised was to always consider ourselves as Lakota people. And this identity is tied to the Star Nation. And I'll talk about that just a little bit because I think it helps people understand our connection to certain places on Mother Earth. When we come from the Star Nation, we come to live in water in our mother's womb. It's our first home. Water is our first home. When we're born, water is placed on our tongue. It's our first medicine. Water is the domain of the women in Lakota Way. On Mother Earth, her adornment is water. Companion to Mother Earth is Wopre. In the spirit world, that means the law. The law is the daughter of wisdom. On Earth, we called her Desami, and she brought our sacred pipe to us and our teachings on how to live well as Lakota people. To us, it's not a spirituality or a religion, it's our way of life. That's how we begin the day, with water. We pray with the water, we drink the water, and it heals us. When we go into ceremony, the water, by being poured on the rocks, turns to steam, and that enters our body to nourish our spirits. We know water comes from the Star Nation. We know that we have a sacred relationship to Mother Earth, to our sacred water, and to certain places on Mother Earth. All of Mother Earth is sacred, but some locations have a ceremonial significance to us that we fight for and defend. In the time of year right now, we look at the stars and they sit in a certain place, so we know we are to be at winter camp, where we'll stay until the spring. In the spring, the stars move. When we see the sun rise through what Western science calls the Big Dipper, to us that is the chinupa, that is the pipe being lit in the sky. So we go to Hihankahapaha, which is Hardy Peak on the map. To us, it's where the owl makes himself over. And we welcome back the thunders. The water will come again with the rain to wake up Mother Earth and to nourish all of us. And the thunder will come to cleanse that which needs cleansing. And then we move on through the Black Hills to Iankava, where we gather paint and stone as we travel on towards the summer solstice, which is where we will be to have our sundance ceremony. On the map, it's Devil's Tower. To us, it's Matotipila, and we have our ceremony there And then our people disperse through the seven canyons and we go our way again. The Teoshpais, the bands. And then some representative from each of the bands will go to Matopaha or Bear Butte. We go there to make our strategic plan for the coming year. The discussion is held among the Natcha, the decision makers, who will hunt where, who will gather what where, what will happen through the course of the winter and the spring and the summer till we meet again at Matotipila to have our sundance. So then the rest of us travel on to our winter camp and then we stay there. So that's how we lived all these thousands and thousands of years by the Star Nation guiding us, directing us, telling us where to go, when to be there, what to do when we're there, how to conduct ourselves. We believe the stars are very sacred places. And you see what's called Milky Way in English and in Western science. To us, it is a spirit road. And it's there as the frozen sacred breath of Tunkashina. In the morning, when the sun rises, you see a fog on Mother Earth. That is on Mother Earth as the stars are in the sky. There's a direct relationship between the Star Nation and Mother Earth. And that's how we live. Today, that's how we live. We're taught Mother Earth is our mother. We say Inamaka, Mother Earth. We say Uchimaka, Grandmother Earth. We acknowledge we are children of the Earth, a relative. Mother Earth is our relative. Water is our relative. The Star Nation is our relative, the four-legged, the winged, those that crawl and swim are relatives. Maybe you heard the saying, Midakuye Oyasi. That means we are all related in English. That's what it means. Not just the two-legged, but the four-legged, the winged, the earth, the water, the plants. Standing Silent Nation, we're all related. Our teachings tell us to always be a good relative. Always be a good relative. So it's a duty and it's a privilege to fight for Mother Earth, Mchimaka, to fight for our sacred water. We say, Mni Wichozani, through water there is life. We all know we cannot live without water. Mother Earth needs her water. Mother Earth needs water to live. We have a prophecy. Someday the earth will weep. She will cry with tears of blood. You will make a choice. You will defend her or she will die. And when she dies, you too will die. That's why we call this sacred water protection work, Crying Earth Rise Up. Uchimaka is rising up. You hear about it every day, you hear about it every week. Earthquakes, volcanoes, tsunamis, tornadoes, floods, droughts. So we rise with Uchimaka to fight for her. We rise with her to protect her and defend her. It just happens to be a uranium corporation, Cameco. It just happens to be TransCanada trying to bring their dirty oil down here from Canada through our treaty territory. So we never sat there and said, let's fight the world's largest uranium producer, Cameco. We never said, let's fight the world's richest oil mine. It's with the direction of our ancestors that we do this work. It brings us to where it brings us. And the spirits gather to be strong. So we are here today together to defend Uchimaka, to learn about Uchimaka, and to be strong together to defend Uchimaka in our sacred water. So our Lakota way of life is sometimes mistakenly called spiritual or religion, but that's not the truth. It's our way of life. When I travel, people ask me if I'm from the Sioux Nation. History books call us the Great Sioux Nation, but that's incorrect. We are Ocheti Shakowin. I talked about Tiwahe all together, make a Teoshpae. All the Teoshpae's together in the Oglala Band. We're the Oglala Band. The Oglala Band is the largest band in the Lakota Nation. There's also the Dakota Nation, Nakota Nation. The Lakotas are the biggest. Of the Lakotas, the Oglalas are the biggest. And it's really sad that there's only 150,000 Oglalas in the world. On Pine Ridge, there's maybe 50,000 when we all come home for a ceremony. The water that's under us is in the Oglala Aquifer, or High Plains Aquifer, it's called also. It runs from South Dakota to Texas. It provides drinking water for 2 million people. It irrigates 30% of the crops grown in the United States of America. It's very old, 25, 30,000 years ago, glacier melt from the Rocky Mountains, along with rain and everything, helped to form the Oglala Aquifer. It's a finite resource. It's depleting faster than it's recharging. It's under our homeland. It's where Kumiko is mining. So it's our privilege to fight them the best way we can with our allies, to fight them, to stop them from mining this uranium and wasting water. 9,000 gallons a minute. Every day, every week, every month, every year for the last 10 years. If they succeed in opening three more mines, it's four times that much. As they mine, the water gets loose from the mine area and it travels. Just like you drink soda from a straw, water goes up and down both ways. That's what's happening to our groundwater with this radioactive water, also the arsenic and other elements that's been unleashed by the mining process. So our people are suffering. We learned about the process to fight them under the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in this country, and we found that the NRC is there to protect the corporations. We learned that the Environmental Protection Agency is basically there to protect the corporations. We asked them, what are you protecting us from? But it's basically a rubber stamp procedure they go through. The Kumiko had to pay $1 million in fines last year for environmental degradation, which they will gladly pay because it's cheaper than cleaning up the aquifer that they're polluting. It's cheaper than cleaning up the surface water that they're polluting. They spilled 300,000 gallons of toxic sludge on a surface water at their mine. We testified at a Senate hearing in Nebraska on the use of water, and one of the senators forced the Kumiko Corporation to admit at the hearing that they were only able to gather up a third of the toxic sludge using earth movers. They had to ship it to a radioactive waste dump. They couldn't gather up the rest. So the laws in this country are not to protect the American people. They're not to protect the water. And we're finding that more and more as we progress in our struggle for environmental justice. against these uranium corporations and now TransCanada oil pipeline as well. We're very isolated out there. And when us 50,000 Ogallas are gone, there is no island to bring some more here. We are gone forever. To us, it's genocide if that's going to happen. We're rubbed off the face of Mother Earth. And there's laws against that in this country and in the United Nations and through our treaty. Our ancestors fought America to a standstill, and America begged us for peace, so we entered a treaty, the Fort Laramie Treaty. We retained a land base from the North Platte River to the eastern banks of the Missouri to the Bighorn Mountains. We kept that land, unceded treaty territory for our people, our coming generations. And they pretty much left us alone until they discovered gold. And then they violated the treaty, and they've been violating it ever since. All over resources, what they call resources, coal, uranium, gold, silver, all of this underground needs to stay underground. But they put a value of money on it. And the value of money that they place on these items is greater than the value they place on us as Oglala Lakota people. And there was no one in the world fighting for us, so we have to stand up and fight for ourselves and for our future and for Mother Earth. In the process, we have gained many allies, other human beings, all walks of life, who also acknowledge their role in creation as a two-legged who depends on Mother Earth for living and for life. We have to take care of our mother. We have to take care of our home. Mother Earth is our home. So in the course of these last 7 years, we also found out about TransCanada oil pipeline. They want to bring dirty oil from Montana to Texas, again, right through our treaty territory, again, right over the Ogallala Aquifer, again, over 200 streams, lakes, creeks, rivers, springs. When they get the oil in Canada, it's the tar sands oil mine is killing our First Nations relatives up there. That is actual genocide, I believe. Where I live in Wounded Knee District, there's about 2,000 of us. The band that lives right near that oil mine, there's 1,500 of them. One third have rare cancers, they're dying. If that oil mine isn't stopped, they're gonna all be dead. They're mining after stripping the boreal forest. Millions of birds have died. Other species are becoming sick. Up there they live on Mother Earth, berries, salmon, caribou, deer, which are all getting sick from the toxins they use to get this tar sands oil out of the ground. It's real heavy. It's like peanut butter at room temperature. It has to be mixed with gas and other items and heat it to 150 degrees Fahrenheit in order to make it liquid enough to slurry it down this pipeline they're proposing. So they dynamite Mother Earth up there. They use the earth movers they had to invent for this project because it's so enormous. No earth movers existed before. They had to invent some. Tires are taller than maybe 4 stories high is the tire of one of these earth movers. They have a river 200 miles one way, 100 miles the other way. In their living memory, they never saw the stones at the bottom of the river until now. They're taking so much water to make one barrel of oil. They use 4 barrels of pristine drinking water. They can't use ocean water. They have to use drinking water. Billions and billions and billions of gallons of drinking water have been used at this tar sands oil mine, and they're also using it to slurry that oil through this pipeline that they're proposing that we're fighting. So if the pipeline is approved by President Obama and Secretary Clinton, it will cross our water pipes at my homeland the water there is so contaminated from uranium mining, we can't drink it. Some of us drink it because we have to. Some people drink water that's piped in from the Missouri River 200 miles away to our homeland through pipes. Now TransCanada wants to put their oil pipeline over or under our drinking water pipes, and we're fighting that. This country has really gone through a lot of changes in this project because we have our treaty with America. America has Clean Water Drinking Act, Safe Water Drinking Act. There's the United Nations Human Right to Water. There's the Indigenous Peoples' Rights under the UN that was passed by the GA a couple of years ago. In our particular tribe, the Ogallala Band, we have an act of Congress that maintains that water pipeline. It's called the Miniwichone Act of Congress. That's going to have to be violated by America as well as all their other laws, all their other acts of Congress to bring this pipeline down here. So to us, it's not just an environmental issue. It really is a life and death situation because our only source of drinking water is going to be contaminated. And there is no existing technology to clean up this kind of oil spill. They've been working on it at Kalamazoo, Michigan for 15 months. $750 million they have spent. They've cleaned up 10% of it. They say $1 billion in 50 years to clean up that one spill. So to us, it's not an environmental issue. It's a life and death situation. The experts tell us by the year 2030, 2/3 of the world's people will not have access to drinking water. And I think of my little grandson, Buddy White Plume, he's age 1. When he's 20, I don't want him to be one of those 2/3 of the population in the world that doesn't have access to drinking water. I want him to have drinking water. He's depending on me, his grandma, to try to make a way for him to have water. So we fight this fight the best way we can, traveling all over the United States, all over the world. Sometimes we end up in other countries, building networks, creating allies, finding spirits who will work with us, like all you all here tonight, brought here for a reason, brought together in this space for a reason. So we let the spirit guide us and lead us, and we do the best we can. We had no concept of greed and selfishness in Lakota way of thought. I mentioned earlier, we always try our best to be a good relative. No greed, no selfishness. A long time ago, Mother Earth shook herself because human beings were being petty and selfish and vain. And those who heard her survived. We went to the Black Hills and we survived and we're here today. Mother Earth is doing it now. She's warning us, don't be selfish, petty, and vain. But all over the world, especially in the United States, there's people who are petty and selfish and vain, and they think only of themselves. We met a selfish man a long time ago in a winter camp. Our teepees were halfway full of snow on the outside. Snow in the trees, snow on the land, snow on the plants. And a hungry man staggered in from the plains and he smelled something in the trees that smelled real good. The buffalo has hardly any fat. What it does have is very special. We use it for medicine, we use it to make fire, we use it in cooking. And when our men hunt, we take the fat and we put it in the belly bag of a buffalo and we tie it into a tree up high and we share it all together, the Teoshpai, remember the relatives, the Tiwahi, all living together, camped together, share everything. Well, this hungry man wandered into our camp one day, starving, cold, it was winter. He had a beard. He was full of snow. He smelt. He smelled the fat, and he took it. He took it all. So instead of our hard work paying off for all of our people, 600 people in camp for 5 months of a winter to have fat, medicine, food, fire, this one man came and he took all for himself and he left. And we call him Washichu. That means the fat taker. Thought only of himself. He didn't think, he didn't even see us, he didn't even see our teepees there. He took the fat and he left. It just happened to be a white man. We describe people, the Cheyenne Nation is the Shahila that speaks red because they're so spiritual and good. Lakota means together forever with love. That's who we are. Japanese, Ishtani Yutita, their eyes pulled back. Germans, Iashicha, because they have gutturals in their language. The first Italian man we seen had really long feet, so they're the Italian are Sitonka, the big feet. So it wasn't about race. He was a fat taker. He came and he stole the fat. He took the fat and he hurt our people. So we fight the fat taker, who could be any race. The fat taker can be any race. It's a concept. The Washichu is a concept. So we fight the fat takers now, Kamiko, Trans-Canada. You all fight the fat taker. You call him the 1%. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
For a minute, if anyone would like to address some questions or comments to Deborah.
Is there anything being done in terms of rainwater harvesting out there?
Yeah, there's a lot of rainwater harvesting going on by basically families in their own homes. I'm not aware of any major businesses or corporations or villages that are doing that. But another thing that we're doing to save water too is in our home, we save water when we wash our hands, we save it. We save water when we wash dishes, and that's what we pour in our toilet tank. What people don't realize is 1/4 of the water going into their homes is going back out through the toilet flushing. And that just seems like such a disrespectful way to treat water. So families can do these type of things on their own. We don't need an act of Congress. We don't need a major government grant. We don't need a donation from a corporation. That's the kind of thinking that we get brainwashed with, that we don't have power as an individual woman, as a married family, as a Teoshpai, as a neighborhood. But we do have that power. That's the strongest power there is.
You're all baffled, Mud.
In the case in which you're the lead plaintiff, Deborah, how do you settle on a particular lawyer, and how do you fund that kind of litigation, and does it appear that litigation is a fruitful tactic among other tactics to oppose what's happened? I'd like to have give us an assessment of the place of American law in the struggle in your home territory.
What we did was we printed out, and it was about 3 feet high, the application by Kamiko to renew their permit and to get a new license. So we sat and we studied this. None of us are attorneys or scientists. We studied this, we figured out their process for the NRC process for opposing corporations. Once we determined the process and understood it as a family, then we decided to ask the spirits for guidance, and so we did, and our direction was to fight for our water. So we put a call out for attorneys who would work pro bono, who would have friends that would help them, and that who loved Unchimaka enough to do this, because we knew it would be a 15 to 20 year engagement. So our attorneys work pro bono. We have to raise money to fly them here and there to hearings. We haven't gotten to the big hearing yet. For 7 years, we've been having side hearings. We win a point, they appeal. They win, we appeal. It's just going back and forth like this. We understand that unless the price of uranium falls so dramatically it's no longer profitable to mine, that they'll probably want to keep mining as long as it's profitable. But we figured filing to oppose them under this process would stall for at least 15 to 20 years, and in the meantime, we'll see what happens. And the price of uranium is falling, and we know that there's enough uranium already mined where they don't even have to mine anymore. We know that it's just greed by the corporations that want to continue doing this. And after Fukushima, we have seen other countries like Sweden and different ones totally back away from nuclear power. And going around like this, educating people just enough where folks can learn more on their own, I think is really effective, because, you know, the American government, I really think they're patronizing to American people, and they think everybody's kind of dumb and ignorant, and I don't feel that way, you know. I think once people learn information, they're gonna educate themselves more, and at some point, action has to be taken, you know, and that's where we were. We had to take action, and so that's what we do. And that's how it is with all of these major issues in America, the Trans-Canada pipeline, the uranium mining, the fracking. We can't sit there anymore and say, oh, he'll do it, he'll fight it. Oh, she's a lawyer, she'll fight it. Oh, that one over there, she's got a lot of money, she'll fight it. We can't do that anymore. Everybody has to get involved. Everybody has to stand up, because everybody has a stake in this. You know, where Cameco mines uranium in Nebraska, when that contamination gets to the South Dakota border, it don't stop there. When it comes to the border of the Lakota homeland, it don't stop there. It goes where it's gonna go. So if we're not gonna fight to stop it, then who's gonna fight to stop it? Who's fighting fracking here? You know, the people down in South Carolina, they're not gonna come up here and fight fracking for New York people. New York people have to fight fracking. And the government, I think, depends on us to just go shopping or play a computer game or go drink beer at the bar or go shopping. But I think Americans are too smart for that.
Anybody else? I just wanted to say to you that Deborah spoke 2 nights ago at Fairleigh Dickinson University, which was a very, very good evening that we all had there, great energy there as well, just like this evening. But one of the things that she said that night that she didn't say tonight that I thought was very important was that each day, each of us has to wake up and take personal responsibility for protecting sacred water and Mother Earth, and that the simplest things that we can do are very, very important. Riding down here tonight on the subway, we got out and the wind was cold, and Deborah was kind of ducking behind the building to protect from the wind, and I said, oh, I just love it like this. She said, oh yeah, but my hair is still a little wet. And I said, well, why didn't you use the blow dryer before we left the house? And it was like, oh, we didn't need to use that much electricity just to dry my hair. And, you know, it's those kinds of things that as American people, were never thought to talk about. And I think that's the sea change, the important change that we're facing, that each of us each day has to, what we call, decolonize our minds, to step away from that corporate consumer culture where all we do is use resources constantly. You know, you don't always have to blow dry your hair, and you don't have to have an iPad and an iPod and an iPhone and an i this and an i that. You know, sometimes you can get by with a few less of those things, and I think that's really important. I always feel that we're kind of lucky here in New York City, because even though we suck up a lot of resources, at least we do it in a very small area, and we have public transportation and things like that. But yeah, I just really want to thank Deborah for coming to New York again and being with us and her people here, and for all the allies tonight. And this is a good. Do you want some help now?
Yeah, I need some help now.
Yes. I need another name. She's a great grandmother, despite her beauty. So we promised an evening of not just words and a film that didn't work out so well, but I think Deborah certainly made up for everything we would have seen in the film. But then we're going to have some celebratory music tonight too, and. To begin with, we're going to have one of our brothers, I'm sorry, Toma Waipara. Did I say that at least close?
Yeah, very good.
One of our brothers from Aotearoa, New Zealand.